4, Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Before leaving for Singapore from the G7 summit in Canada, U.S. President Donald Trump said there must be a fair and reciprocal trade between the U.S. and other countries. He said the United States has been taken advantage of for decades, and they can't do that anymore. Trump said many unfair foreign trading practices are getting straightened out slowly but surely. While there, Trump also spoke about Russia and the fact that it's no longer part of what was the G8.
I think having Russia back in would be a positive thing. We're looking for peace in the world. We're not looking to play games.
And Trump is heading to Singapore for a planned meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, and he seemed optimistic about that meeting.
He can take that nation with those great people and truly make it great. So it's a one-time shot, and I think it's going to work out very well. And that's why I feel positive, because it makes so much sense.
The administration is seeking the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. In exchange, Pyongyang is believed to be seeking relief from international sanctions. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo hinted Thursday that Congress might be given a say in any deal President Trump may reach with the North Korean leader. The Taliban announced Saturday it will halt offensive operations against government security forces across Afghanistan during three-day festivities, which marked the end of the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan. The ceasefire coincides with the unilateral week-long halting of anti-Taliban operations by the Afghan government. An insurgent statement said the Taliban leadership has also ordered fighters not to hold meetings in civilian areas during the holiday period to enable their countrymen peacefully celebrate the festival. This is VOA News. One U.S. Special Operations soldier has died. Four have been wounded after al-Qaeda-linked militants attacked an outpost still under construction Friday in southwestern Somalia. Friday's attack, about 50 kilometers north of a city, came as U.S. forces were helping Somali and Kenyan troops construct the outpost. It's part of a multi-day mission to help clear the area of militants with the al-Shabaab terror group. Witnesses said the attack took place near the town while the U.S., Somali, and Kenyan troops were digging trenches and setting up other defenses. They said the militants set off a series of explosions before targeting the forces with heavy gunfire and mortar rounds. A helicopter was brought in to evacuate the wounded. Judges at the International Criminal Court in The Hague have overturned the war crimes convictions of former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba for atrocities committed by his forces in Central African Republic. The appeals court Friday overturned an 18-year sentence for Bemba, with the presiding judge saying that Bemba can't be held criminally liable for the crimes committed by his troops in the Central African Republic. The Washington Post is reporting that Chinese government hackers have breached the computer system of a Navy contractor and stolen large amounts of sensitive data. The Post said that the hacking took place in January and February. According to U.S. officials, it said that the stolen information amounted to 614 gigabytes of material, including secret plans to develop a supersonic anti-ship missile for use on U.S. submarines by the year 2020. Other information stolen included signal and sensor data for submarines. Humanitarian agencies are warning of a possible attack by the Saudi-led coalition on Yemen's port city Hodeidah, and it could put the lives of 250,000 people at risk. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Jens Laerke is spokesman for the Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. He says the humanitarian coordinator for Yemen, Lise Grande, fears a military attack or siege on Hodeidah will impact hundreds of thousands of innocent lives.
The UN and its partners estimate that as many as 600,000 civilians are currently living in and around Hodeidah. Humanitarian organizations have rushed to develop a contingency plan. In a prolonged worst case, we fear that as many as 250,000 people may lose everything, even their lives.
The United Nations calls Yemen the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Saudi Arabia began bombing Houthi rebels in support of the Yemeni government in March 2015.
Lisa Schlein reporting for VOA. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
President, you have committed to depoliticize the university and allow the university authorities to attract, to recruit their own leadership so that the university is able to attract the best professionals that they can afford.
Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio seeks to abolish the practice of the heads of state becoming chancellor for public universities.
The idea of federalism was among the ideas that were raised, and the commission made its report as it got it from the people, and it has transmitted it to the President of the Republic.
English-speaking Cameroonians want a return to the federal system of two states in the Central African nation.
The country is very much in agreement that Mugabe had to go. We asked people whether they thought the military intervention was right or wrong. 41% said it was the right thing to do. 12% said it was the wrong thing to do. But the remainder, about 40%, said it was the wrong thing, but it was necessary.
And Zimbabweans see the military intervention that led to the resignation of President Robert Mugabe as either the right thing to do or wrong but necessary. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio seeks to abolish the practice where the head of state becomes the chancellor of public universities in the country. It forms part of his promise to Sierra Leoneans ahead of the recent elections. This, as the president hands out degrees at the Injala University in the Moyamba district Saturday. It came after the president wants lawmakers to review the law which enables the head of state to become chancellors of public universities. Information Minister Mohamed Radu Sware told me this will be the last time President Maada Bio would preside over a ceremony as chancellor of any public university.
Well, His Excellency President Julius Maada Bio will be conferring degrees on over 1,500 students of the Jala University College, having completed various courses ranging from diploma courses to doctoral degrees. In fact, the Deputy Minister for Higher Education, Mr. Turat Senesi, will be conferred a doctoral degree on Saturday. In 2019, he will cease being Chancellor of the University because he ran a campaign on the platform of depoliticizing the university. The university over the years has been so politicized to an extent that you always have the president as Chancellor of the university, whereas faculty and key professionals have been attracted to the university. So in the manifesto, the New Direction Proposed Manifesto, President, you have committed to depoliticize the university and allow the university authorities to attract, to recruit their own leadership so that the university is able to attract the best professionals that they can afford.
Does that mean that the president will move for a new measure to accomplish this task, that a president will no longer be the chancellor of universities in Sierra Leone?
Well, he did say during the state opening of parliament that the reform process of the University Act of 2004 will commence in earnest. That act will be reviewed with a view to ensuring that the president ceases to be chancellor of the university, so that the university leadership will now be taken over by academics with profound experience and qualifications, with the right research networks, with the right experience and the right caliber, timber and caliber to lead the university so that they can contribute to the desired output to national development.
Does the president see this as just a fashion to buck the trend? Because since he was elected by Sierra Leoneans, he seemed to be turning things upside down, as his critics say.
No. What he is really doing is putting things in their right context, putting things in perspective. Over the years, Sierra Leone has seen a bastardization of education to an extent that a country that was once reputed, the University of Farabi College, that was once reputed for being a citadel of learning that attracted the subrequent of Athens of West Africa, is today a laughing stock. You had a university where exams were postponed because they could not afford question papers. You have had a situation where for the last decade, students have not lived on campus. The curriculum does not speak to the everyday challenges of national development aspirations. So he wants to depoliticize the university so that we can have professional university done, whose business it will be to focus on addressing key and strategic issues facing the university and thereby contribute to national development more profoundly.
What do you say to his critics who are saying that instead of improving the living conditions of professors at the universities, he is just undergoing what they call cosmetic changes just to appease his whims and caprices?
Well, President Bill is committed to a root-and-shoot reorganization of the university to position it to play its critical role in the national development aspiration. Amongst the things he has committed to doing is to ensure that he reviews the terms and conditions of service of university lecturers. When we took over government about 2 months ago, university lecturers were owed arrears of over 4 months across the country. In the first few days of his presidency, probably the first few months, in the first 1 month, first 30 days, he ensured that all arrears were paid to the university. That is not a man who is concerned about cosmetism. That is a pragmatic man who is ready to do the heavy lifting so that he creates an enabling teaching and learning environment and improves the morale of teachers and lecturers so that they are able to deliver quality learning for the next generation of Soil Union leaders. So anybody, even critics, are confounded by the way he has approached, you know, the issues bordering on arrears payment and improving the life of the university in so short a time.
Early this week, the president came up with a directive that all public servants who are over 55 years old would have to retire. What made him do that? Because it took a lot of Sierra Leoneans unawares.
President Bill did not reinvent the wheel. That is in our laws. 60 years is the retirement age for public servants. He merely invoked that law and ensured that this is now being implemented. By that means, you are creating opportunities for, you know, public servants who also aspire to career progression, who want to have clear career paths, right? That is what it does. So instead of throwing Soil Unions out of a job, it's giving Soil Unions a new hope, new opportunities, and new prospects for career progression within the service. So this has been roundly applauded by people in the public service across the divide.
Some are suggesting that his ministers who are over 55 years old would also have to step down because they are also public servants. How do you respond to that?
Well, those who are suggesting that do not really understand the distinction and the difference between public servants and political appointees. President Bill's ministers are political appointees. They don't go through the Public Service Commission. Public servants, as we know them, civil servants, go through public service recruitment process. They are hired and fired, their promotion, benefits, and everything that relates to them is done through the public service. Whereas my appointments, like my colleagues in government, are all political appointments. We are not subject to age and other restrictions.
Mohamed Radu Soare is the Sierra Leonean Information Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. The Cameroonian National Commission for the Promotion of Bilingualism and Multiculturalism says a return to the federal system of two states, one English-speaking, the other French-speaking, could help end the ongoing crisis. The announcement came after the group met with representatives of the English-speaking regions. The representatives said a decentralized system, which gives powers to the regions, could address complaints over the balance of power in the Central African nation. For reaction about the report, I reached Dr. Elvis Ngolengole, coordinator of the Academia for the ruling Cameroonian People's Democratic Party, or CPDM, in the Cameroon Union capital, Yaoundé.
This commission has a terms of reference, and in keeping with its roadmap and the instructions that the president gave it, this commission has been moving from region to region. They began with the southwest region about a week or two ago, and last week they were in the northwest region on what they call a listen to the people tour. And so in the course of this tour, the people of the Northwest region raised certain points. And among the points was the point on federalism. I'm not quite sure the exact structure of federalism or the exact form of federalism was discussed. But the idea of federalism was among the ideas that were raised. And the commission made its report as it got it from the people, and it has transmitted it to the President of the Republic.
Do you foresee or anticipate President Paul Biya accepting this wholeheartedly and implementing it? Because this is what a lot of people in the English-speaking areas have been calling for since they said former President Ahijo or founding President Ahijo basically dismantled what has been in existence since the country's independence.
Well, you know, the people have made their points and they've done so freely. I think that is the Republican spirit. And I think the commission too has done its work by listening and transmitting the information as they got it from the people to the president. I think that in all fairness, it is only logical that we allow the president to do his work. It is only the people of the Northwest region, and don't forget the Northwest region is only one out of the 10 regions of Cameroon and one out of the two English-speaking regions of Cameroon. So it doesn't mean that just because the people of one region have spoken, that means that it is the truth or it is what everybody thinks.
If this is the case, this is the concern that has been raised as one of the measures to help resolve the ongoing challenges or political and security challenges in some of these English-speaking areas. Why wouldn't the president, and for that matter, the government, expeditiously act in order to restore peace, law, and order in those places to protect life and property of Cameroonians?
We all, as Cameroonians, agree that there's need for peace and for dialogue. I think that we all concur on that. But now as to how expeditiously the issue has to be treated, I think that it's fair to say and logical to say that I don't think that the people, when they freely express themselves, they express themselves in terms of ultimatums. I think that we should allow the President of the Republic, with the power that he has under the Constitution, to do what chief executives will do in all republics.
Some members of the CPDM, I understand, saying that a dialogue of federalism is not the political strategy of the CPDM. So it is unlikely for the ruling party to possibly urge President Paul Biya to accept this outcome of this body. What do you say to that as a member of the ruling party?
The issues that have been raised are not issues of the ruling party or issues for the ruling party alone. They are issues of the republic. And for the entire republic, that means there are issues that involve and require that all the stakeholders, all the citizens, all the civil society, political parties, whether they are in power or in the opposition, should all be involved in reflecting about how we can put this together in order to move forward as one nation, united in peace and in democracy.
Dr. Elvis Ngolengole is the coordinator of the Academia for the Ruling Cameroonian CPDM. He spoke with me from Yaoundé.
Former Malawian President Joyce Banda has met with 16 other opposition political parties in the commercial capital, Blantyre. The parties with no representation in parliament and the Public Affairs Committee met the former president in talks aimed to form an alliance ahead of next year's general election. Supporters of the former president from the opposition People's Party seek to make her the presidential candidate to challenge incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika in the polls. For more about the meeting, I reached Noah Chimpe, Penny, spokesman for the People's Party in the capital, Lilongwe.
Even before our president was still abroad, there were such meetings taking place with other opposition parties. In fact, our representative then was Honorable Adi Musa, who was our acting president. So this is just the continuation of the same. These opposition parties have been inviting other opposition parties just to talk on issues that affect the country.
How did the meeting go following former President Joyce Banda's presence?
They were just briefing her on what has been going on while she was away. Basically, I think that was the main, because this was the first meeting that she attended. So basically, she was just getting a feel of the events in the country.
Do I hear about what you are calling or what opposition supporters of the PP is calling the Tinsente Alliance in 2019.
Now, maybe people are just jumping the gun, considering that among the opposition parties that are meeting, PP is the largest one. PP is the one who has got a big base compared with others. So basically, maybe they're looking up to PP that should there be a possibility of working together, maybe all the opposition parties fielding a candidate. Maybe the one with a better chance would be the president of PP. So that's why they're doing that.
So far, what has been the status of Kassim Chilumba, former vice president?
I haven't heard from him, apart from just hearing that he's been part of the meetings. I know that he's got his own party, but we haven't seen much of him on the ground. I haven't seen him running around the country holding meetings. So I would say that I don't think there hasn't been much of what he's been doing.
So since former President Banda's arrival, what has been the movement of the party? Because I understand some sections of the party would want her to represent the party because they feel she might be the only legitimate person with a pedigree to challenge President Atapita Mutharika in next year's presidential election.
Yes, there's been huge excitement since she arrived, and she's been running up and down the country. At first, she was in the eastern region of the country. That's where she arrived. She spent some days there. She held some public meetings. Then she traveled by road up north. She met committees of the party. She met chiefs. Then she traveled by road again further north. Of course, she also attended some church services. Then she traveled further north by road. And when it came back to the Rongo again by road, so there was a huge excitement. And also she made the executive committee of the party, and she made the Politburo just to get their views what they feel should be the way forward.
The former president said that Malawi seemed to be a fragile nation now, saying that upon her return from exile, she has found that the hardship she left have now worsened about 10 times under Peter Mutharika. Is that the position of your party, the PP?
Yes, it's not just the position of our PP, but that's the position of the majority of the people in the country. That's the way they feel. That's true.
Some critics are saying that she is aware that she failed to improve the living conditions of Malawians before she lost the election, and that she's incapable of resolving these hardships, even if she's given another mandate to rule the country or to become the country's next president. What do you say to that?
No, it's not only followers of her party that are saying that, but the majority of Malawians are saying that. Especially in the people say that. I say in the energy sector, it was better then than it is now. So that's where people are talking more of her. But whether that would translate to vote this time around, we don't know it. Only the voters would know.
So what is the PP seeking in trying to talk to all these political parties?
Yes, because there's that agitation share from the church. I mean, the people, the general public are also saying the same thing, that at least they don't, because you know, our country is fragmented, at least the major parties can claim that they've got bases in different parts of this country. So if one wants to win comfortably, at least one party has to work with another party. That's the feeling of the people on the ground.
Noah Chimpeni is the spokesman for the Malawian Opposition People's Party, or PP. He spoke with me from Lilongwe. A new Zimbabwean poll shows that most Zimbabweans see the military intervention that led to the resignation of President Robert Mugabe as either the right thing to do or wrong but necessary. According to a new survey by Afrobarometer, there's widespread support for the 2017 military intervention which forced long-term President Robert Mugabe to step down. This, while large majorities reject military rule and any regular role for the military in the country's politics. For more on the latest poll, I reached Dr. Michael Bratton, Afrobarometer Senior Advisor in the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
This was a poll that Afrobarometer conducted. It focused on two issues. First was how Zimbabweans feel about the leadership transition that occurred through military intervention in November 2017. and secondly, what their expectations were for the election that is forthcoming on July the 30th this year, 2018.
Did you find out the country is divided based on your polling with respect to those who support the transition that forced President Robert Mugabe to step down and those who oppose that?
I would say the country is very much in agreement that Mugabe had to go. We asked people whether they thought the military intervention was right or wrong. 41% said it was the right thing to do. 12% said it was the wrong thing to do. But the remainder, about 40%, said it was the wrong thing, but it was necessary. So if you take those who said it was the right thing and those who said it was necessary, you get a clear consensus that Mugabe had to go.
Some of his supporters are saying that that was illegal and an affront to the Constitution.
Many of them are saying that it was the wrong thing to do, so they think it was illegitimate, but they also say it was a necessary thing to do because there was no other way of getting rid of Mugabe.
Talk to me about the upcoming election in general. What did your poll find?
Well, the election is a way of setting the constitutional system right, returning Zimbabwe from an illegal situation where there's been a military intervention to a situation where there's an elected leadership. People are quite excited about this election, and there's active contestation going on even as we speak in the final 7 weeks in the run-up to the election. We do have some preliminary results of voting intentions based on what people thought at the end of April, beginning of May, and I'd be glad to share those with you.
Talk to me about the biometric voter registration process as the Electoral Commission compiles a voter list to be used for the elections in July.
This is a new system for Zimbabwe, as you know, and it is generally being well received. We asked people about whether they were able to access the process, whether they were satisfied with the way they were treated. And for the most part, people were positive about that process. The one negative thing that I would say about it is that following the issuance of the voter registration slips, many unauthorized people, principally from the ruling party, that is ZANU-PF, have been asking citizens to reveal the serial number on their voting registration slips, and people fear that this is a way of tracking how they will vote in the election. It's a subtle form of intimidation.
Did your poll find how Zimbabweans trust the Electoral Commission, and do Zimbabweans trust the Electoral Commission's ability to organize free, fair, transparent, and credible elections in July?
This is an important question, Peter, because the history of ZEC, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, has been a spotty one at best. In fact, it's been an instrument of ruling party resilience. I would say that with its new chair, it's gained a measure of independence. The fact that it was able to run the biometric voter registration has helped it establish its independence. But there are still holdovers from the old regime within the Electoral Commission who are felt to be loyal to the ruling party. As far as trust in the Electoral Commission is concerned, overall it falls just short of a majority, about 46% trust the Electoral Commission. It's somewhat lower than that in the urban areas, slightly higher than that in the rural areas.
That brings me to this question about the hypothetical scenario of who could possibly win the election. Will the power of incumbency and the name recognition of both the ZANU-PF party, the ruling party, and Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is the current president, will he get that favorability against Nelson Chamisa, who leads the MDC alliance?
This is the question that is occupying everyone's mind, as you might imagine. Our survey from early May shows the following: that if the election were held at that time, 42% say they would vote for Mnangagwa and ZANU-PF, 31% say they would vote for Chamisa, either as the leader of his own party or as the leader of the MDC alliance. But critically, and I do want to emphasize this, 26% of the respondents refused to answer that question about their partisan preference. What this means is, as things stand at the present, no candidate has enough revealed votes, declared votes, to win on the first ballot, which requires 50% plus one.
Dr. Michael Bratton is an Afrobarometer senior advisor. He spoke with me from Harare. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the World Health Organization says it is cautiously optimistic about containing the spread of the Ebola virus in the Democratic Republic of Congo, but warns that much work lies ahead. 38 of 62 suspected cases have been confirmed so far. Of this total number of confirmed cases, 27 people have died. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports the majority of confirmed Ebola cases were detected 2 to 3 weeks ago. Since then, there only have been a few sporadic cases. It notes there have been no confirmed cases since mid-May in two of the three affected areas in DR Congo, the large city of Mbandaka and Bikoro, where the virus was originally detected 1 month ago. Peter Salama is the WHO's Deputy Director General of Emergency Preparedness and Response. He says the fact there have been no recent confirmed cases is important. He says nearly 700 people who were in contact with infected individuals have been immunized with a promising experimental vaccine.
We have added cause for optimism because now we've reached, for the majority of the contacts, more than 98% of the contacts with vaccination. And because the vaccination for the majority of them occurred more than 10 days ago, we believe that the majority of those contacts in the ring vaccination are now protected against Ebola. So that gives us a lot of source for optimism, along with the fact that we haven't seen cases since mid-May in those two locations.
Salama says phase one to protect urban centers and towns has gone well, and the WHO now will begin phase two. He says the focus will be on vaccinating health workers and contacts of infected persons in the third affected area of Iboko and the tiny town of Itipo within this health zone. A case of Ebola was confirmed there on Thursday. Iboko is a very remote, forested region with a large, marginalized indigenous population. The town of Itipo has no infrastructure, power, or running water. Salama says the logistical challenges of identifying, tracing, and then vaccinating every contact of an infected person in this area is enormous. He says the work ahead over the coming weeks will be very tough. An Ebola outbreak in West Africa a few years ago left more than 11,000 people dead. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control reports that more people are committing suicide than ever before. But suicide isn't uniquely an American issue. The World Health Organization estimates that every 40 seconds, someone somewhere in the world commits suicide. Experts say the key to preventing suicide is to get help early and to reduce the stigma surrounding mental illness and suicide. VOA's Carol Pearson met someone who has devoted her life to doing just that.
Dorothy Paw was 9 years old when her father took his life.
I count that day as the last day of my childhood because from that moment on, I had no sense of security.
I met Paw in front of her father's grave at Arlington Cemetery, a place reserved for war heroes.
It's important to me that people not label those who die by suicide as cowards, because my father was brave. He fought in World War II, and I think he just got overwhelmed.
Nearly 50 years later, her life was shaken again by yet another suicide.
I lost my son in 2012. This is my favorite picture of Peter, because he has hint of a smile, so understated, but he has piercing blue eyes and he's paying attention. He's looking at the world with love, I think.
Each year around the world, some 800,000 people die as a result of suicide, and that doesn't include the countless others who attempt to do it. The World Health Organization says this translates to one self-inflicted death every 40 seconds. But the impact on families, societies, and communities is far greater.
The ripple effect is enormous. His brothers, his girlfriend, myself, his father. It's a shock that takes years to recover, to find footing again.
Yet experts say suicide can be prevented if governments create policies to prevent alcohol and drug abuse, make guns safer, reduce the stigma of suicide, and provide support for those suffering from depression and diseases that cause depression. Paul Gianfredo became an advocate for early treatment when his son developed a mental illness. Gianfredo heads Mental Health America.
Suicide is the ultimate stage four event for a lot of people who have got serious mental illnesses. And frankly, it's a ultimate stage four late stage event for a lot of people with other kinds of chronic diseases as well, too, who might not have had a mental illness.
Because of her experience, Paul became an advocate for suicide prevention.
If we think someone may be troubled, ask them outright if they're having thoughts of suicide. It's not a comfortable conversation, but it's a lot more comfortable than a funeral. And that's my hope and my purpose in speaking about suicide, so that people know that it is preventable.
Mental health experts say getting people into treatment earlier, at the onset of depression or other mental illnesses, can prevent people from taking their lives. They also say mental health screening, particularly for teenagers and young adults when symptoms of mental illness typically begin to emerge, would go a long way in treating the illness before it becomes severe. Other recommendations include reducing the social stigma associated with mental illness and making treatment more widely available to family members and friends who need it. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
This been a total cheat. You must see my lawyer. This been a total cheat. You must see my lawyer. One virgin, one two virgin, one two virgin, one three virgin. Shayna, you be more for virgin. Yeah. You be back on a virgin, on a virgin, back on a virgin. Virgin, rock and a virgin. She imagine you go for virgin. Yeah. Almanta kudu ma bita na shi. Una fi kamba ya manta na su. Almanta mi ke bita na shi. Ala ya ni lai ala ki. O yalmane simli ma sona belamli. Mangura ngo sona bashili. No name ngo sona bapuksili. Ashele mkura. Girl, why you lie me? You lie me, say you be brand new girl. Even now no say you de lie me. No, no, I know one painting, I mean talk. And yes, I now I love you, why you brown me? I love you, why you around me? You know I say I love you, why you brown me? Why be say I marry you beautiful? This day and you are okay. Why be say I marry you beautiful? This day and you are okay. This been a total cheat. You must see my lawyer. This been a total cheat. You must see my lawyer. One virgin, one two virgin, one two virgin, one three virgin. Shayna, you be more for virgin, yeah. You be back on a virgin, back on a virgin, back on a virgin, on a
virgin, rock and a virgin. She's a virgin, so virgin. Michelle, I don't want no lipstick. What the pencil, if you were eyebrows. What would to my good, they give me big tits. Now I gain this, I never go find out. Now when I walk out, say, will you be that? Will you virgin? I figure that the man who he. What do you give me, cause only more dressing. So what the bow was who I challenge them, call ye. Tickle Zemi. Bujara, mina waye mi se mi sise menewara. Se se awa bo me kapa ni se mi ni dama. Odi ewo, mu fami nko ke na fama. Me kapa ma we ni mada me princess. So what's around the bag, yo sempa. Se mo se me bua, the Lord is my witness. E ma bi ni suba edi, ano mo ma yen kama bre.
I don't know you, you be born one virgin.
What else?
One virgin.
One two virgin.
One two virgin.
One three virgin.
Shayna, you be born four virgin.
Yeah.
You be back and a virgin. And a virgin. Back and a virgin. Kind of virgin, what kind of virgin? She ain't a girl who go for virgin, yeah. And then you let social media know who lay you like Wikipedia. When you don't want let you copy, I would kill a little bit of Margaret. You won't be a Sataraja, or born no to my me fooling. I'm our first born, you'll be the shamsu. I'm going to pay for you'll be the gausu. Sasa, you'll be the born of my boss. Then you'll be a jake up and go fast. I'm a sad baraja, overload my me fooling. I don't know you be born one virgin.
One virgin,
one two virgin.
One two virgin,
one three virgin. Shayna, you be born four virgin, yeah.
You be back and a virgin,
and a virgin, back and a virgin, and a virgin, back and a virgin. Shayna, you be born four virgin, yeah.
Black and beauty, you're my delight. Beautiful face and you smile so bright. Candlelight dinner, let me organize. Siku nyingi nina fantasize. Why? Can we have a special night? Me and you, looking at the twinkle light. It will be a day for me to memorize. No bother, bother, nobody jeopardize. How about you? We will be together forever. Forever together everywhere. Together like birds of a feather. Me and you, oh, 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 oh. Kujani kupe chako, na wewe unipe changu. Kujani kupe benzi, na wewe unipe benzi. Nikupe, unipe, nikupe na wewe unipe. Nishike, nikushike, nishike na mimi kushike.
Mpenzi bakali, kila siku eti subiri. Sasa nifanye nini, kupata wakati nyambie. Lady, nikupe nini, sema chote. Mbona unichibu baby, naomba unipe wakati. We will be together forever, forever together everywhere. Together like birds of a feather.
Me and you, oh, oh, oh. Kujani kupe chako, na wewe unipe changu. Kujani kupe benzi, na wewe unipe benzi. Nikupe, unipe, nikupe na wewe unipe. Nishike, nikushike. Nishike na mimi kushike. Kwa nini ninakufuata? Una vyote navyotaka. Unajua nilidata. Muulize seneta wa kota. Sasa napiga magoti. Nakufuata na mimi sichoki. Naomba unipe ripoti. You know how I love you shoti. Chameleon, love you. We will be together forever, forever together everywhere. Together like birds of a feather. Me and you, oh 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 oh. Kujani kupe chako, na wewe unipe changu. Kujani kupe benzi, na wewe unipe benzi. Nikupe, unipe, nikupe na wewe unipe. Nishike, nikushike, nishike na mimi kushike.
Spana mili. I know.
I'm not not she bad. Omotini kakai. He can go and confine it.
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Douglas Impuga, and our engineer for today, Tiang Wang, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, he who thinks he is leading and has no one following him is only taking a walk. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On June 8th, much of the world observes United Nations World Oceans Day. The idea is to remind people how important the world's oceans are to all life on Earth, to celebrate their beauty, and to bring attention to the impact human activity has on the oceans. This year, the theme is preventing plastic pollution and encouraging solutions for a healthy ocean. The world's oceans cover nearly three-fourths of the Earth's surface and contain 97% of our planet's water. They produce over half of our oxygen, help regulate our climate, absorb carbon dioxide, and support the greatest abundance of life on our planet. Nearly half of all species on Earth depend on the oceans for survival, and for many of the rest, including for people, the oceans improve the quality of life. The oceans are also indispensable to the world's economy because they are key to transportation and recreation. And inasmuch as over 95% of the underwater realm remains unexplored, it is nearly a certainty that their depths may hold the cure to many a disease, the resolution to many a problem. And yet, as much as 40% of the world's oceans are heavily affected by human activities that result in pollution, overfishing, and loss of coastal habitats. Of particular concern is plastic debris. Some of it comes from ships that ply our rivers, lakes, and seas, and eventually makes its way into the ocean. But about 8 million metric tons of plastic waste washes off land into the ocean each year. Once there, it begins to break down until it turns into small fragments known as microplastics. Plastics are a serious threat because they degrade very slowly, entangle sea creatures, damage habitats like coral reefs, and are ingested by marine animals. Researchers have documented impacts of plastic on over 650 different marine species, including sea turtles, seals, whales, dolphins, porpoises, seabirds, and fish. On World Oceans Day, we must remember that the health and safety of our oceans is our collective responsibility, one that we cannot afford to neglect. Only through good stewardship can we safeguard the health of our oceans and ensure that the oceans continue to meet the needs of future generations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.